Okay, and let's give a rousing Tulare County welcome for our warm-up speaker, Barbara.
Hi, everyone. I'm Little Barb, and I am from Hanford, California. And I am a real alcoholic. I am 58 years old, and I've lived in Hanford my whole life. Gosh, my drinking career started in my junior high days, actually, and it carried on throughout the whole until now. My first DUI was about 30 years ago, 30 so years ago. In fact, I even wondered what my my BOC was back then, because my most recent DUI, which brought me into the program, which I'm so grateful for, was November, it was Thanksgiving, November the 24th, 2011. It was Thanksgiving. The Niners lost. But, you know, drinking vodka that night. In fact, my dad, he's elderly, and so I had a big advantage because I stay with my dad too now, and he would buy these big bottles with the handle, you know, and I would drink it. In fact, kind of like Sanford and Son. So by the time I timed it, by the time I go to the restroom, I'd make my drinks, right? And to fill it back up, I put water to you know, so he wouldn't notice. Oh, he knew, I'm sure, but that's how I lived a lot of my life. You know, my drinking just, wow, I was so trapped in my alcoholism that, gosh, through the years, my mother, she passed away in 98, never getting to see me get sober. She tried helping me with my problem, you know, telling me I had a problem, but I didn't have a problem, you know, and it took its toll on me through the years of getting depressed, thinking suicidal thoughts, becoming a hermit, and staying in my apartment and not going to do anything, not go anywhere. Wow, you know, I had a nice car out there, but I don't know, I got so depressed. The alcohol took over on me. And I didn't want to eat, you know, and she'd bring plates of food and put it by my door, and I'd wait till she leaves and I'd bring the food in, you know, and wow, to live that life. And you know, I am so grateful now today, that DUI that I got on Thanksgiving, my BOC was .24. You know, I could hear the officers in back saying, wow, she's three times her body weight, you know, and, you know, it was weird, but yet, when I came to the light, I knew something was going to be done. I knew I had a problem, but I wouldn't admit it, you know. Yet I put my family through hell. My mom, my dad was alcoholic, still is. He's still alive. In fact, he's probably having a highball right now. In fact, this morning, about 3:30, I got up and he couldn't find no grape juice or anything, so he found Gatorade. And that's what I used to do. Now I see so many memories of how I used to live, you know. And I'm so grateful I don't live that way anymore. Today I am so grateful of Alcoholics Anonymous. In fact, when I went to court, they pushed my court date to April. So I had time. My first AA meeting was December the 5th, 2011. And you know what? A couple of meetings in between, I was hooked. I was totally hooked. I love AA. And that's for me. I loved AA. It was just because I knew I finally found something. I found a purpose. AA helped me find a purpose in my life. I feel like I'm reborn. You know, and coming this December the 10th will be 3 years for me, which I could never have gotten on my own. You know, God has done for me what I couldn't do for myself. And today I'm doing living amends. You know, my mom can see what I'm doing. And actually, God is number one in my life today. AA brought me back into a relationship that I was lost. You know, it brought me into a relationship. There's so many, wow, awakenings that I've already seen that it's awesome. It's such a new life. It's such a new life, you know. Now I'm 58. And I am nervous right now. Okay, this is my first time. But, you know, AA has done so much for me today. It's given me a new life. And I knew I had to change my lifestyle, which my old friends still, they support me. But my whole life now, today, I'm so involved. I was a functional drunk. I'm a foreman at Del Mine, and I've been out there 28 years. And we just got done with the season, and you know, I just always want to drink because I'm working with different personalities, being a foreman, you know, and the easy way out was coming home to have a drink. I work graveyard. So in the morning, I would, I would have my stuff ready so I wouldn't have to go to the store, because who wants to go to the store and buy stuff in the morning, even though I knew I just got off work, but yet, you know, that's the way I lived. And it didn't matter whatever shift I was on, whether it was first, second, or third, I always had to have that drink. But God took that urge away from me. I don't have that urge. And now I'm living with my father, and I still see the big bottles, and I don't have to put water in them no more, you know. But, you know, it's so awesome what AA has done for me today. It's given me a new life that I get so overwhelmed at times. It's just... I truly do, it's just, I owe so much to AA. In fact, I want to give, and it's true, you can't keep it if you don't give it away yourself, you know, and that's where I'm at today. I'm so grateful to all you here today, and pretty much that's it. I'm really nervous, my first time ever being in front of one of these, and with that I'll say thank you.
Let's give a rousing Tulare County welcome for our featured speaker this evening, Barbara.
I don't need this. Hi, I'm Barbara. I'm an alcoholic. I might as well get this out of the way. If I hurt your feelings, I don't mean to. If I say something that pisses you off, call your sponsor. If you don't have a sponsor, get one and pray for me. I'll get better. Now that we got all that bullshit, I blew it. It's all Lily's fault. I'll try not to cuss. I really will. Well, I came from an alcoholic home. The elephant was in the middle of the room. We never talked about it. There was mornings when my sister and I would wake up and my mother's glasses would be out in the front yard and my dad would be down the street. And nobody talked about it. And I had a brother that was 18 years older than I was, and when he drank, he'd always want to fight or something, and my mom was the only one that could control him, so there was always disruption there. And he went to prison. And as a little kid, I got to go see him at prison. And, you know, that slamming of the gates, and that was enough to scare me. It didn't scare me enough not to be an alcoholic, but it scared me enough for a while. And I always wondered what he did, and nobody would tell me what he did. And I finally got to ask him when we got older. And he worked for a guy, and I guess the guy paid him, and he didn't think he paid him enough, so he added a couple zeros or something to the check. With the way my family had all secretive, I thought he killed somebody, they wouldn't talk about it. And so my brother and I were the black sheep of the family, and it was crazy. All the isms were there. Nobody wanted to talk about what really was the problem in our family. My mother had my brother, like I said, he was 18 years older than I am, and I'm 65, so way back then, he didn't have a child out of wedlock, you know. And so that's one strike against her. And then when my dad died, I was only 3 months old, his dad threw her off the farm. So here she is with three kids and off the farm. So I don't blame my mother anymore. I'm surprised she didn't drink more. The way she had to do. She was always the one that worked the hardest in the family. She was a good hustler. And we all, you know, are good survivors. She always had, I can remember, she always had the jobs. She either worked in restaurants or bars and ran them. And I would work in the restaurant with her. And in the bars, at a certain time, we could be in there because there were just little three-two beer joints, you know, there weren't no big deals. And my dad, I get, he was my stepfather, but he was the only one I knew, was a carpenter when he came out of the war. But I don't know. My brother and him used to fight all the time, so nobody talked about anything. My brother hated him, he hated my brother, and my sister, I think, got the worst end of it. You know, she's 5 years older than I am. And when my mother passed away, by this time we had moved into, I'm from Minnesota, so the accent will come and it'll stay too, probably. We moved to Minneapolis. And because by this time my sister had gotten married, my brother's doing whatever he's doing, and I'm doing what I want to do. 13 years old, I didn't have the discipline. I always hung out with the older crowd. I had one girlfriend who was the same age as me, but the boys, they were stupid. They didn't do the fun things, you know. They didn't drive cars, and they didn't drink and all that stuff. So I got busted for being out after curfew and hanging out with the older crowd. Minnesota doesn't take that like, you know, they didn't slap your hands and go home, you know. So I got the privilege of being in a juvenile center for a couple of months, and then I got to live with nuns for 16 months. So if you're one of those that think religion is going to stop you, I am proof it don't. It just slows you down. Yeah. I went to Mass every morning, yeah. And until my mother died. And I'll tell you how she died, because I usually don't talk about it. So if I cry, oh well, you know, it's hard to be much at with blown snot bubbles, but I'll do it. She had left my dad, and she also still worked in the bars and that, and she had this relationship with this man. That night, I was told she was supposed to be coming home. And he shot her. He shot her twice. And he killed a police officer. And she never came out of the hospital. Well, I was locked up by this time because they locked me up for being incorrigible. They called it incorrigible, and I didn't have no supervision over me. And because my dad didn't adopt me, he couldn't take me. So I got to live with those wonderful nuns. Needless to say, I'm not a follower. I'd rather be in front of the pack getting ran over first. There was three groups of young ladies. You know, there's like 18 in each group, and the nuns, they were crazy. They're absolutely crazy. They'd take us to the cemetery to let us smoke. And if you ever seen a penguin walking down the street with about 30 little young girls, you know, we'd be all in a row, go into the cemetery and puff our cigarettes, get to go back. And the only reason they allowed me to smoke is because my mother said I could. You know, and I don't even know why I'm talking about that, but I ended up leaving. When she passed away, when they called and by this time, I was getting rebellious with the nuns, and that we had one. God bless her. I'm sure she's passed away now. Mother Frances, we called her. And we worked in the laundry, doing Great Northern Laundry. And her hands were so full of arthritis that she, you know, if she didn't get out of bed in the morning, she wouldn't be able to walk. And she'd be in there. And I couldn't work on the manuals or anything like that because I was too young. But I got to fold a lot. I got to fold a lemon to get ready to go soon. And she'd always say, fold them in turds, fold them in turds. And she'd poke her little bony fingers on your shoulder. And you know, she didn't have to hurt you. And you wouldn't hurt her, you know. And for some reason, I liked her, you know. And she would give, if you did right, she'd always treat you with something, you know, with candy or something. And Mother Frances Xavier was the head of our group. And she used to yell at us because we'd eat potato chips and drink diet soda. And this was in Shindig, was that you couldn't watch Elvis because, you know, they'd only show Elvis from his boobs up because you couldn't watch him shake, you know. I'm sure they're rolling over in their grave now with all this kind of music that's going on, you know. But, and her and I got, every time I got close to somebody, maybe this one, every time I got close to somebody, I was too scared to stay close to them because they always left and they died. And I didn't learn that until after I was in the program. But one night, this nun and I got into it, and we had this folding and sliding door between the TV room and the living room, and she grabbed it, and she threw me out of the room, and she closed it, and I pushed the door, and I heard this thump, and I went, I'm dead. And I'm excommunicated from the church. I just get a nun, you know. It was on a crack, and nobody could tell me anything, you know. And I fought them enough that they let me go. And they gave me a consecrated cross and told me I was never going to make it, and all that. I made it for a while, and then I became an alcoholic, you know. But I, you know, that shows me when the book talks about it, you know, is what leads up to it, you know, taking trips, not taking trips, swearing up, wherever. I went from Minnesota to Milwaukee, Wisconsin in the riots. I was right in the middle of it. I was in St. Paul in the middle of the riots. It was exciting. I should have been in the Wild Wild West, you know, with the, or the Capone, you know. I've been born in these different places, and I'm in the wrong place. I fell into it, you know. And I started my journey of this alcoholism, and all the time believing in God. I believed in God. But I found the priest to give me the answer that I wanted to hear. And we do that in this program. We'll find somebody that, you know, give us the answer we want to hear, and we'll go do whatever we want to do. And that was about going to Mass on Sunday. Was it more of a mortal sin to go to Mass on Sunday because you had to or that you wanted to? And he says, because you had to. And I said, that's it. 17 years old, I quit going to church. You know, I knew what I was doing. So then I'd try little things, you know, steal a little bit, see if I got busted. Didn't get busted. See? God don't care about me, you know. And then I started out, you know, in the, living in Minnesota, they had after-hour clubs because the bars closed down a lot earlier than they do out here. And they had all the illegal gambling and the prostitution and whatever you could find it in there. And we'd go out and hang. This girlfriend and I would go out and hang out in the after-hour clubs and sit on the couch, and she'd love to start fights. And she would say, just sit still, don't move now. Now when this fight breaks out, don't move, don't get up, because you'll get hurt. Okay. So she would say, did you hear what he said? Bunch of? And they got, yeah. I mean, they were half crossed and all here. And she'd get a fight going, and we'd sit there and laugh, you know. And I always got to know the owners of the bars and that, so the after-hour club. So I ended up working behind the bar one night, and this guy pulled out a pistol and was pistol whipping this old lady, and he had his finger on the trigger, and it shot me. And I was pregnant at the time, and it shot me in the stomach, and everybody panicked, and you know, and I went to the hospital, and I have no idea why I'm talking about this stuff, but anyway, I went to the hospital, and my brother-in-law brought my sister, and because this is how my mother died, okay, and he said, I'm bringing your sister to see you once, and you won't see her again. And I said, watch me, you know, and it took a while. I think I ended up about 4 or 5 days in there, and then my girlfriend took me home with her. That's the only reason why they let me go. The bullet went in my stomach, but it didn't go in with the babies. I say babies, because I had twin girls, and they used to always tease me that the bullet split them. That's why I had twins instead of one. Yeah. So, you know, if you don't think you have guardian angels or God looking out for you, well, I'm proof, because I still have the bullet in me, and my daughters are 46 years old. I'm 45 years old. and so, you know, that, and I wasn't even 20 when I was doing that stuff, you know, and not thinking nothing about it, you know, young, dumb, full of dumb, please go for it, you know, and the excitement of it all, you know, so, you know, and I did all these geographical changes, and one night, one of my girlfriends had a car, and this other girl, I mean, she had three kids or something, and the song, Do You Know the Way to San Jose? She goes, you want to go to San Jose? Sure, let's go. Yeah, put my clothes in that diaper bag and came out here in a 57 Chevy with the shocks tied up by a wire. You couldn't get in the trunk unless you went through the back seat. And there's no reason to do it anyway because we only had a winter tire as a spare tire. So, you know, we'd have been out of luck if we had a flat tire. But three of us came out there, them two went back and I stayed. And my kids were born in San Jose. And I met my future husband, my first husband, in San Jose, and he was from Missouri. And I said, you know, I come 2,500 miles to get away from all these fools because I lived out of Missouri, and it got a little too rough, and I had to get out of there, you know, being shot and shot at and all those, and they don't play down there, you know. So, and then I come all the way out to San Jose and I meet my first husband. And he drank. He drank only beer. and if you wanted any, you had to drink as fast as he drank to get your share, you know. And so needless to say, I think he got a drunk driving and I got one and he got another one and then I think I was on my second one and I thought this was a little crazy. And very violent, very volatile relationship. The cops in San Jose used to say that one of these times they're going to come and find one of us dead. Well, it almost happened. We were getting along that night. His kids were down from Fresno. My two were there. And we went out for a couple of drinks, came back. And his daughter had put the chain on the door. And I said, hey, no big deal, she's going to take it off. And he swung and he hit me. And you guys think I'm bad today. It was on and cracking. And I walked in the kitchen and I got this stupid steak knife, and a little steak knife, and I thought, well, this will scare him. Well, it didn't. And he started coming to me and I kind of dropped my hand. Well, when I dropped my hand, he walked into me. That's how close he was. And I hit his artery. And he lost 3 units of blood. And you only have 5 units in your body, so. I called the ambulance, and the cops came and that, and I went to jail, but they let me loose. And then I went to court for that. And because he didn't show at the time, the DAs didn't pick it up at the thank God. They didn't pick it up at that time. And so I got to come home, and I was going to leave because I thought, man, this is just a little too much, you know. He's going to kill me the next time he gets a hold of me. And then he talked me into staying, and the next fight we got into, he says, well, I'm just going to have a cops come and get you and, you know, put you back in jail. And I went, wrong. Can't get me twice for the same thing. They already did it, you know. So, and I lived that way for like 14 years or 15 years, off and on, just fighting, constantly fighting. And we had both had good jobs. We both, at the end there, was working at Ford Motor Company. We went up and we moved out of San Jose and we moved into out of town of Hollister. It was supposed to be make or break your marriage. You know, we were going to try it again and he wasn't going to go mess around and we weren't going to fight and, you know, all those good promises that never happened. And I don't even think we were there 2 weeks, and he was in town messing around. About the fourth week, I'm getting people telling me that they're going to kill him because he was black. And Hollister didn't like a lot of black folks at that time. And he came home one night and kicked me out of bed. And at 2 o'clock in the morning, I hit the wall of the bed. I went, what the hell did I do this time? You know, Tom. messing around with Mike Somaya. I did not know who Mike Somaya was. I knew his brother Willie, but I didn't know him. Well, I had met Willie. I knew Willie with my husband. That's the only reason why I did. So I go to town. See, if you're gonna kick my ass, I'm gonna know why you're kicking my ass and if it's worth getting my ass kicked for. Pool tables are hard. Bar floors are dirty. I could not stand this guy. He's a short little Mexican behind the bar. I go in this bar, a couple Charlie's. Ask for Christian Brothers. They don't have Christian Brothers. What the hell kind of bar is this? You know, and I asked for something at Jack Daniels. They didn't have Jack Daniels. Well, the owner was drinking all the profits. The owner was drinking all the booze. But since I got accused, you know, I had to find out. You know, it took me a couple of times because neither one of us liked each other when we first met. And then just, you know, snowballed in. My alcoholism took over. I didn't care. I didn't care anymore. My husband was doing the same thing. He was, you know, whipping my ass saying I was messing around. I'm going to go find out if he's worth it. You know? And no shame in my game. And I did that. And it ended up the sheriff's... my ex-husband was fighting me, and my daughter jumped on his back. And I went, oh, no. See, because all that time, I didn't think I was hurting anybody but me. I didn't think it was hurting anybody but me. And I didn't realize the anger in her till I saw it that night. And I had to have the sheriff take us into town, because he wasn't going to let us go. And I went into town and stayed with a friend of ours and that. And I ended up working at the same bar. And he ended up being the manager of the bar. Absolutely crazy. And his brother at that time was going in and out of AA, but his body was literally dying. And he needed a heart transplant, but because of his home life, he wasn't married, that he didn't have the aftercare that they thought he should have. Plus, his whole body was giving out. So we had the big party that we had. It was February. His birthday was Cinco de Mayo, and we decided we were going to celebrate Willie's birthday in February because we didn't think he was going to live any longer than that, and he didn't. And he had went to AA, and he told me, he talked to me, and he said he was scared. And I understood that. I understood why he was scared, you know. And when he passed away in February, and in March, I hit the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. I did not stay. I stayed dry for 25 days because this other guy that I worked with, Cliff, God bless him, I hope he's still alive too. And he's the only one that could outdrink me. See, Mike wanted a partner that could drink as much as he did. Well, him and his brother used to pass out at the bar and I'd still be going. Yeah. And Mike would be at the end of the bar and all of a sudden you'd hear this thump. You'd look down at the bar and no Mike, you know, where's Mike? He'd get up, push me over. And Willie would be passed out of the bar with his head on his drink. Well, if the ABC board came in and for your license, you were supposed to take this drink away. He wasn't letting that drink go. And he'd be out cold, but he'd never let go of that drink, you know. Yes, and his other brother, he had two other brothers. Only one's alive now. And he'd go to the jukebox and he'd pass out leaning So you have Mike falling off the stool at one end, Willie laying on his drink at the end, and Henry on the jukebox, you know. And Louie would be down at the other bar trying to pick up another woman or something, you know. It's absolutely insane, Louie. You know? And that's how I started with Mike, you know, and when Willie, and I did, and I went to AA, but we went to Gilroy because we didn't want Hollister to know that, you know, we were getting help. It was okay that three cops had to put me in a car the night before and I had to go down and get my shoes in front of the bar the next day, but you cannot see me going into Alcoholics Anonymous. So we went to Gilroy. and they handed me how it works, and I went, this is too perfect for me. You know, I can't do 10 commandments. How in the hell am I going to do 12 steps, you know? And when they say, Alcoholics Anonymous will ruin your high. If you don't want to be here, you know, I'm sorry. We screwed up your high. You know, go out there and try it again. And have a head full of AA and a belly full of booze. It just don't work. I tried it. And I, you know, it took me a year and a half to get back. I stayed dry for 25 days. I got clipped through DTs the first time I watched anybody go through DTs, and I deserved to go get drunk. And that's how I felt. And that year and a half, I didn't realize I was out there that long until I went back, because these girls, there was three girls. I thought there was four for a long time, but there was only three. There was Weep, she was a white girl and very educated. Carla was a Indian, I think, but she was a nurse. And Jenny was a Mexican that Cliff had put me in this old raggedy car with these three women, and took me to Laguna Seca, and Jenny shared her story. And she talked about having plastic curtains in her bathroom, and I thought, well, what's wrong with that? You know? And then she talked about, you know, eating out of garbage cans and underneath the bush. And I said, well, I haven't done that. I'm looking for all the differences. And we would talk about her relationship. You have a bunch of shelves on the back, and you take the relationship and you put them on that shelf, and then when you want to play, you pull them down and you play with them, and then you put them back up there, but sometimes they don't want to stay up there. You know? And I thought, I don't see nothing wrong with that. And Carla, God rest her soul, I don't even know if she's alive either, but she did pharmaceutical and street drugs, you know, and taking them from her patients and that. And these were the three women that made the impression on me the first time around. But when I was out there, their story stuck to me. And I knew they didn't lie. And there was a couple other guys that had shared in Gilroy, and Danny, I guess he used to be a preacher, and he talked about Noah's Ark being an alcoholic. Who else would put up with two kinds of animals in a big boat, you know, that long? And I remember him, I remember them talking, and I remember the look in their eyes. And I knew they weren't lying to me, but I was scared. I knew I couldn't do it, you know. And a year and a half later, I was sitting on my front porch, and, you know, God sends Eskimos, and he sends me Bob, this one guy I knew, and he says, Barb, what are you doing? And I said, I don't know. He says, you want to go to a meeting? And I said, yeah. And he walked me 2.5 blocks down to our fellowship. There's 13 bars at Hollister, and I live behind three of them, in a corner. I knew I could not walk that 2.5 blocks to get to that meeting without getting drunk. That, I think it was Sunday I woke up. That Sunday morning when I knew it wasn't him, them, or they anymore. And I knew I had to go to God. And I knew it was over with. I knew it was over with. But I knew if I walked out that front door, because Payne's is over there, and Augie's is over there, and, you know, Smokehouse is there, and I knew I could get a drink. They hadn't seen me for a while. They were going to buy me a drink. I knew, you know, I did not drink any places where you had to put your little pinky out. I drank where, you know, a shot was like two and a half, you know. You could walk in broke and go out drunk. And I hit the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, and like 2 minutes before the meeting started, and the minute we said the prayer, I was gone. Because if you knew who I was and what I had done, you wouldn't let me in the rooms. And we had this little old lady, Faye, God rest her soul, she passed away. She used to be a column writer in the newspaper. And she would sit there, and she'd always say to me, now, Barbara, do you eat with that mouth? If Ollie and I get along great with the language, okay? and she smoked a lot. So if you were low on cigarettes, you always sat by her because she, when these were smoking meetings at the time, you know, she'd light up one, she'd hand you one. I'm a survivor, yeah. You know, I bartended. Clean this over. I bartended. You know, I worked in a restaurant and a bar. I had food to take home for my kids, and, you know, I had the alcohol. And then the truck drivers would come in, and we'd switch and deal and wheel and do all the other stuff, you know. It wasn't my stuff. I didn't care. You know, so, but I thought I was honest when I got here, you know, like cash register honesty. Until one night, one of his bartenders left her money sitting on the cash register. I didn't think Mike knows it, but I took that money because I owed somebody that money the next day. And they're all over looking for the money, so he had to repay her, so that was $35 extra, you know. I didn't think nothing. You know, it didn't cross my mind that that was not the way you do it. You know, you're out there to survive. And I got in this little fellowship, and they kept telling us, you know, keep coming back and let us love you until you can love yourself. And I'm, you guys are nuts. But there's an old lady, Daryl, and she was a doctor's wife, and I think it was her name now. I will in a minute. This other guy, he was from back east, you knew they didn't hang their dirty laundry out, you know. It was not yet, and you didn't share till you had at least 90 days, I think, or 6 months in a home group. You didn't share at a meeting. You shut up. You listened. You knew nothing. Your best behavior got you here, you know. Take the cotton out of your ears, shove it in your mouth, sit on your hands. We don't want to hear from you. You know, talk to your sponsor afterwards if you've got anything to say. Yeah, so we finally, there was like 3 or 4 of us that hung out together. Somebody made a comment the other day about, you can't work with somebody until you've done all your steps. And I said, well, I don't think I'd be here if that had been the case, because the ones I hung out with, we were too close in the months and weeks together, you know, and we all hung out and ran around together. I wouldn't be here if somebody would have had to work all their steps to work with me. You know, and the first time they made me chair, they had 2 chairs up front, one for the secretary and one for you. And the fellowship, our fellowship hall is just like half of this. And I sat in that chair, they made me sit in that chair, they made me. And I had an outer body experience, I know I did, because I'm going, what the hell? And the 2 people that I did not know, I did not want them to know what I had done, you know, what I did in the past, and what I was like, was sitting in the front row. And I kept arguing with God, and I said, I can't do this, I can't. You know, and like, I'm up here arguing, you know, but I'm sitting in this chair, and my sponsor always said, you know, say a little prayer, and, you know, start talking, so I never know what's going to come out of my mouth most of the time. And I did, and when I opened up my mouth, all my past came up, and they were sitting there, and I went, oh my God, you know, I just wanted to go underneath the chair. And after the meeting was over, they came up and they hugged me and they loved me more. And I thought, these people are crazy. Absolutely. And, you know, and that's where my journey began. And like I said, the old timers around us, and we didn't get away with a lot of stuff, you know. And I'm grateful for that today. I really am. I have nothing against recovery homes. They didn't have that many when I first came in here into the program. And my sponsor said I needed one, and she told me about, I said, well, what are they like? And she told me about living with all these women, and I said, hell no, I lived with them when I was with the nuns. So she said, then you will do what I suggest you to do. Well, her suggestions were, you will. Yeah, you didn't say no. And she said, I got her distilled today as my sponsor. She was short. She was older than I was, so I couldn't hurt her. You know, you're always told not to hurt anybody littler than you and older than you, you know. But I put my fingers around her throat and threatened her, you know. And she'd laugh, and I'd pick her up and swing her around, you know. Because I couldn't hit her. I couldn't hurt her, you know. And she'd get into service, and I'd be right behind her because she made me do whatever service she had to do. I was the ultimate of whatever, you know. And I think Salinas had their first Unity Day, and up in Salinas, and I'd get up there, and she says, "Well, I signed you up for something, I don't know what." And I went, "Oh, okay, that's fine." And they put me behind the literature table. Oh, I don't remember nothing about this stuff. Yeah, and that was my first Unity Day, you know. And I got to go hear Clancy in my first year, you know, in Monterey, and I laughed. I told my sponsor, I said, "I don't know if I'm going to fit in." And she said, "Don't worry about it, we'll go in there." And I remember Clancy was talking, and he said something about there was a lady in the room the night before with wine on her breath. I hope she, you know, tonight she doesn't have it. And half the room went, you know, and the other half went, "Yeah," you know, and I went, "Oh, I like that, man." Yeah, I like that, man. I like that honoriness, you know. And I think those are privileges for me, you know, to do it now. We went to a lot of meetings. I didn't have a car. I walked off my job because I would have drank if I didn't. My first amends was to that lady even before I got to that step because I did walk off my job with her. And it was with the guy that I had went through the DTs with, you know, because he was a chef there. And, you know, my journey began, and it was that, I look back at it now, I never, ever, ever want to do my first year again. I don't care. It would be first year is a gift, but when you have to do it twice, you know, I mean, I only stayed dry for 25 days, but when you have to do it twice, it just, I don't ever want to have that empty feeling that I had when I got here. That you, I can look in the mirror today, you know, fat and sassy, honorary liver, look in the mirror and be okay with that. You know, Carl, that was the old man's name. Carl, and he made me, for 14 days, hug myself and say, "Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful." I had to look in the mirror. So, you know, and he was my boss. So I knew if I didn't do it, he's going to find out, right? And he's in the fellowship. And he's, you know, an older part, so and so I'm doing this wonderful, looking at the mirror, and I think it was about the fourth or fifth day when I could look straight at the mirror and say, "Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful." Now, you know, and a lot of them, people say, tell you, "I love you, I love you, love." I couldn't do that at that time. Today I can. But, you know, I couldn't at that time. I wouldn't have been able to say, "I love you." I didn't like the woman in the mirror. Today I get, yeah. Some days are good, some days before we got here, got a little hairy at home, you know. But that's all right. Yeah, it's just life. I don't have the right words to tell you what this program has given me. If you knew my, when I married Mike, he was walking, he had his eyes, he had his two legs, he thought he was the cock of the walk, you know, and we even had a motorcycle at one time. It broke on the way to the convention. We pulled it over the side of the road and went to the convention. Yeah. It's just, I ended up adopting my grandson. I took him from my daughter because I found marks on him. And I had said, "See, don't tell God anything when you're drinking or not, because I still got this little boy had marks on him one time when I was drinking, and I let his mother get away with it, and I swore I'd never let it do it again. If I ever saw a kid with marks on him, I was going to turn him in." Well, I forgot to tell God I didn't want it to be my grandson, but it was, and we were living in Vice Area, so a few Vice Area people knew how I went through that. Three and a half years for that adoption to go through. And today, my sweet, wonderful son, grandson, never has seen us loaded, drunk, anything. Is 25 years old, he stands 6'6", and he's got a marijuana card, and I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. Marijuana ain't nothing. Now, he broke his arm skateboarding while he's working in the fields with his raggedy car that he brought back from Ohio. that has no insurance. I don't even think it's registered, you know. He loses that because he can't show up. He can't get up every day, you know. And I'm going, and I almost reached out and touched him because he was that close to me. But I told him, I said, yeah, you're right. I said, marijuana ain't nothing. It ain't nothing but the gateway to everything else, you know. And he goes, damn, you're putting words in my mouth. I said, you do not want to go down that road with me. You know, I stand on the chair. I don't care, you know. But it's been a crazy ride. My sobriety date is March 27th of 83. My worst day in sobriety is still 500 times better than the best day out there. There is nothing out there. My first convention, I think, proved that to me when we held hands and said the Our Father. And for the power of the spirituality to, you know, run through. My second sponsor, when she had 21 years, she went out. And on Facebook, this is the only good thing of Facebook I got out of this, is I got reconnected with her. And today, she has 45 days. And she asked me to be her sponsor. And somebody said, is that kind of weird? Well, she lives up by Sacramento, but we talk every day. And I got to go to the Women's Hand in Hand Unity thing, and we met there, and it was in Lodi. And now her daughters came back in the program again too. You know, and when I found out she had went out, I asked her, I said, oh, you do meeting right here in Sacramento? You must be a lot of meetings there. And she said, I don't go to meetings. And I went, you know. And I says, you know, do you still have your time? Because her birthday was ahead of mine, and she'd always passed down her chip to me. And she goes, no. And it felt like somebody reached in and just ripped my heart out, you know. Because she was the one that had 5 years in the program. We're standing in front of my apartment. Nothing's wrong. I got money in the bank. I even had pictures hanging up on the walls. I decided I was going to stay where I was at. You know, I didn't do that for a couple of years. My kids were not fighting me. You know, everything was going okay. And I was telling her, tell me, the day before I turned on, I says, tell me it's worth it. I don't hear no other bullshit. Just tell me it's worth it. I don't hear no cliches or anything. So she stood in the middle of the street while I'm ranting and raving and telling me that it was worth it. A couple of weeks later, I asked her, I says, how come you showed up? You know, it took me a while. Yeah. And she says, I was coming to get you so we can go drink. Yeah. So God saved us that time, you know. And so it took me about 3 weeks of talking to her before she was even going back to meetings and that. And I says, what happened? What, you know, she had I thought she had a strong program, and she had a crazy ass husband, but she had a strong program. And she said she just she gave up going to meetings, she gave up hanging around people in the program, and she threw God aside. And she her husband had lost everything. He had flipped some stock or something and lost everything they had. I'd have killed him, but she didn't. But and that's my worst, my biggest fear of this is, and that's what keeps me here, is I don't ever want to be spiritually dead again. And I was spiritually dead when I got here. The drinking don't scare me. The using don't scare me. I see too many examples of it all the time, you know, to remind me that what it'll do for me. But that spirituality, and if you ain't got a God, please find something in charge of your life. My God is everything. My God's my mother, my father, my sister, my brother, my boyfriend, my, you know, my friend, whatever. I had a fire my Catholic God, I had a fire my gotcha God, I had a fire my first year God, and realized that He is everything to me, and He's with me all the time. And when I finally got in my head, He already knew what I was thinking. Then when I was writing in my journal, I could write truthfully. I could write exactly what I was feeling. And my sponsor would say,
right.
And I go, so I'd go home and my sponsor said, I have to write, you know. And I'd laugh, because when I go back to read it, what boiled down to it, it was the abandonment. I didn't want to be abandoned. And I was sitting in a meeting one night, and this gentleman, in fact, he stood up for our marriage and the fellowship, and he's passed away. He lost his son in a fire in an apartment. And he said, Barbara, he says, nobody can take memories from you. You can always have the memories. But, you know, I'd only allow you so close. And I'm like, thank you. And I mean, I'd get mean and I'd get loud. I would do everything in my power to get you the hell away from me because I was getting too close to you. I don't know. I don't have all the right words. I don't have the $50 words if you want to hear them. I don't. I told my God to talk to me in street language and language that I understand. So when I get mad and say the short serenity prayer, he understands it, and you know, and that's budget. This is the only place you can say that word God in the same sentence and not get, you know, condemned to hell for doing it. You get a lot of eyebrows raised and you might get people not talking to you for a while, but you know, that's it. You know, I wish Sammy was here tonight. She texted me last night and she goes, how much do you love me? And I go, what does love have to do with this? And then she goes into a long spiel, and then, you know, she says, will you feel it? I said, I don't think they want me. You know, and Mike was giving me a bath. She says, you don't want to do it. And I said, not really. I'm not a willing participant of telling you who I am, because I don't know who I am. I still don't know who I am. The longer I stick around, the less I know. You know, all I know is life happens. When Mike lost his first leg, you know, there was fellowship involved. When his arm went down, we were in Visalia, you know, fellowship was involved. His eyes went down, fellowship's involved. Anytime I moved, fellowship moved me. You know, I don't know, but I do know I come from the old school, and when they say, Byron, you can't say that to the newcomer, I go, they said it to me. I'm still here. And I really am grateful for the old timers that will say what's actually going on. And Gary, and I got to put this in my story because I always usually do. Gary, at 25 years, I think he's celebrating 25 years, came over to Hanford and shared a meeting. And I don't think I was doing that swiftly or something. Something was bothering me. But he got up and he shared about putting that gun in that woman's mouth that overdosed his son and wanted to pull the trigger, and he didn't do it. And I went, if that old fart can sit up there and tell that truth, then why can't I? You know. So if you think that your story isn't going to help somebody, it is. If you think I knew what I talked about, I don't. I'm praying all the way over. Please, God, say what you need to say, because I was so angry at Mike, I wanted to drop him off on the freeway. But I don't want to do that now. Yeah. And I've shared too many meetings when we're not getting along that it would be premeditated anyways. I didn't get away with it. He'd come back and haunt me or something. God bless Sammy, but we got little Barb up here, and I chose her because if you didn't see her enthusiasm about this program, then you need to come around here again, because if you're down, you need to listen to her for a while to see just how excited she was. And she reminds me of, you know, early sobriety, that we didn't have places to go dance and stuff. We'd go to bars, but we always went with a group. Now, if you got drunk, you know, but she always said, if you're going to drink, don't go out with Mary and Barb. It's going to happen. But I haven't had to quit anything in this program that's enjoyable, like hunting or fishing. I don't know about hunting, but you know, fishing. And I took Mike fishing early sobriety. You know, we rode the bikes. there's too many things there's too many things to do in sobriety, you know. So if you're not having fun in sobriety, or you're bored, you're not doing your steps, you're not reading the book. If you're having trouble sleeping, pick up this book. It will put you to sleep. Anyway, thank you for putting up with me tonight instead of Sammy.